Fake news has become such a byword that I think it basically stands for whatever somebody wants it to mean, who holds a position that is different to the position that you may hold personally. And so I want to sketch out the landscape and to show that the word is a little bit more complex than is understood. I'm not going to go into the history of it, but I imagine that the majority of people have a misconception about the origin of fake news. It's not a very old phrase. And I was in a taxi, I think 2 days ago, with somebody who confidently asserted that the originator and maintainer of fake news is Donald Trump. Actually, that's incorrect. It's more accurate to say that the Trump or the Republicans did a hostile takeover of the concept of fake news and have used it as a weapon against their political opponents. I want to illustrate a really simple concept that sometimes is forgotten. Charles Taylor, in his wonderful little book, Modern Social Imaginaries, has a phrase that has been deeply influential for me, and that is the taken for granted too obvious to mention. And often when we encounter news or opinions that we don't like, we tend to forget that we see with our minds just as much as we do with our eyes. And I will demonstrate that using a series of optical illusions to illustrate just how imperceptible the influence of the mind is on our perception of what we see or we perceive to see. I will briefly touch on the notion of truth as a social construct, which is almost ubiquitous today among young people, just to assume that truth is whatever I choose it to be. And then I'm an advocate of positive realism. In other words, there is a truth out there that is simply unamendable to any social construct that anyone seeks to put on it, and then draw some conclusion. So when I was doing some research a number of months ago into the subject of fake news, I wanted to understand some of the history of it and sought to do some research. And first draft is often associated with the construction of the term fake news. And I like this as a kind of framework to approach fake news, to try to scope the landscape. What exactly are we talking about? Is satire or parody fake news? Whenever there is no intention to harm, but there is an intention to deceive. It's obvious that many of you are familiar with this, but do you remember the impact that this had in society? Because this was done by one of the Dimblebees, and it was perceived as BBC truth. And it did a lot of harm. Now, when I did a presentation in South Wales on fake news, I showed the video. I showed the extract from the presentation, and it's done very professionally. There is nothing in the presentation that would suggest that this is one of the greatest April Fool's jokes ever done. And so, for example, I think it's really interesting that they chose Switzerland and not Italy to do the parody on this. Misleading content. This is the idea to frame the subject in a slightly misleading way. Next slide, please. Anybody remember this slide?
Yeah.
It's etched in my mind. Please, next slide. I remember this. And the reason why this is so personal to me is I spent virtually a year of my life in the Balkans because of a lie. This was so powerful in public concept that the government had no option but to deploy British troops in the Balkans. So where it becomes very personal to me is having to tell my 3-year-old son that his daddy is going to have to go away to a place he has no concept of, and he won't see him because children don't have concept of time at that age. But I said to him, son, I'm going away to help children like you in a faraway place called Bosnia. See, after 4 months of being away, my 3-year-old son said to me, I don't care about the Bosnian children, daddy. Because he saw things through the lens of a child. The truth of this is that these emaciated people, I mean, that's true, but they weren't in a compound surrounded by barbed wire. The compound was actually full of guards. Now, this was not a fun place. This is not a joy place. There's nothing good about this place. I've actually visited this place. But in order to have an impact on audiences across Europe and the Western world, the photographer had the original idea, maybe not that original, of actually going inside the compound and photographing out, knowing that the image that people would see, we see with our minds as much as we do with our eyes, that people assumed this is a concentration camp, and Europe promised itself that it would never have a concentration camp again in Europe. And yet, 37 years after the end of the Second World War, it looks like there's a concentration camp in Europe. Next slide, please. False connection. When headlines or visuals, captions don't support the content. Next slide, please. And this is hugely influential during a presidential campaign. There's no truth in this whatsoever at all. I think we're now getting into the era of what most people would associate to be false news. The Pope did not endorse Donald Trump in the presidential election. So it is, these are real characters, and these are actual hits, but the connection is deliberately false and misleading. Next slide, please. False context, where genuine content is shared with a false contextual information. Next slide, please. This was huge, literally just a few months ago. And when this became public, it went viral. And this young man was ridiculed globally. Typical of a particular aspect of youth culture, utterly disrespectful to a Native American individual. When the video footage was released of what happened, this young man was with a group of Catholic high school students, and they were using the Lincoln Memorial as a gathering point, as a reference point, and it was a melting pot of all different types of conflicting voices and opinions and conversations. He stands still and does nothing. This individual homes in on him and walks right up to his face and plays the drum in his face. But when the image was shown, the immediate interpretation of people around the world and the spin that was put on by certain media formats is how insulting and disrespectful the youth of America is to an aged Indian American. Nothing could be more false. Next slide, please. Imposter content. I apologize. I have an infantile sense of humor. And having had the presentations we've had, I feel almost embarrassed to show the next slide. Now, we assume this to be self-evidently false. Yeah. But actually, there's sophisticated work going on today in which one of the issues is called deep fake news that we will be faced with. And this is going... So if you've never heard about this before, be very afraid, because this is on its way. Really sophisticated computer algorithms that copy literally hundreds of thousands of facial expressions and tone and voice, and it is impossible to tell a fake presentation today because the computer programs are so fabulous. And it's almost impossible. And you see, the reality of this could be really distinct. So President Trump, there's a video of Trump goes viral saying America has launched a retaliatory strike against North Korea. And it looks like Trump. It sounds like Trump. It's surrounded by CNN News or Fox News. Da, da, da. And it's fake. It's generated by a computer. How do you think North Korea will respond to that? Will they go, is this fake news? Do very serious stuff. Next slide, please. Manipulated content, where genuine information or imagery is manipulated to deliberately deceive. Next slide, please. And again. Okay. This is a good example of modern propaganda, in my opinion. That's the image that the world saw. The Allies wanted to portray the Iraq war in a certain way, that they would be seen as liberators and welcomed as liberators. And this is a carefully framed picture. I apologize for the next picture because it's not of high quality. Next slide, please. That's what it was actually like. All of the people, can you go back a slide, please? All of these people, next slide, please, are here. Then you can see the area is ringed by tanks and armored vehicles. It's true, there was a group when the statue of Saddam was felled. What is not true, that Baghdad turned out to celebrate. What you have is truth that is carefully captioned and carefully constructed to give a misleading content that Baghdad was celebrating an event, when actually, when you look at that picture, you're talking about at most a few dozen people. But that was big news. That was a headline that people bought into. Next slide, please. Fabricated content. That's new content that is 100% false, designed to deceive and do harm. Now I think we're into the depth of fake news. Next slide, please. Hillary sold weapons to ISIS, so says a political insider. Breaking news, Hillary filed for divorce. And actually, for a lie to be successful, there has to be an element of truth. Who would have thought Hillary was acting unreasonably if she divorced Bill, given how we imagine the former president behaved? Next slide, please. And this is only recently. This happened within the last 2 weeks. That's why I wanted this to be up to date. There was a WhatsApp message that suggested that Metrobank had run out of funds, and if you had money in Metrobank, you needed to get there instantly to take your money out, and somebody tried to create a run on a bank. Banks do not have the physical cash in their vaults to pay everybody that banks with them, and neither are they expected to. No bank does. But you can create a run on a bank. It happened with Northern Rock. If you have enough people turning up, demanding money to come out, it happened in Cyprus, you can get a devastating economic effect. Next slide, please. So how prevalent is fake news? I think it's something that we really fear. And therefore, as with a lot of things, we imagine that it is more prevalent than it is. Let me ask the question. Now, some of you may know the answer to this, so I'm half expecting you to get it right. What percentage of UK public uses Twitter? What do you think? 'Cause we've heard about Twitter storms. We've seen companies sack people, change policies, you know, confess all kinds of wrongdoing. What percentage of the UK public? 8%. That's all. And as we'll see, next slide please, I'm basing this actually on a really interesting paper done by Nelson and Changia. Next slide please. Now, there's a note of caution needs to be issued here, and that is it's very difficult to take findings from one culture and simply import them into another. But there has been a consistent history of ideas and principles in the States filtering their way across the pond. The pond is not that great in distance terms anymore. But nevertheless, the findings are fascinating, because when we think of fake news, we think of the cultural wars that are taking place in the States. Next slide, please. Key findings of the research. Fake news audience group comprises a small, disloyal group of heavy internet users. So contrary to public opinion, those who seek after this and live in this pool of fake news, incredibly small, they also tend to be disloyal. In other words, they're like bumblebees. They move from thing to thing to thing to thing. They don't stay. Next slide, please. So I think this is a really interesting graph. So at the top graph indicates the number of people measured in terms of thousands that accessed what we would consider or would be generally considered to be reputable news sources. And that is organizations that generally, by and large, there are always exceptions, both CNN and Fox get it wrong, that check their sources and seek to make sure that the evidence of the details of the story are correct. Look at how prevalent fake news is. It hardly registers on this particular graph. This graph indicates the amount of time. So those people seeking out and wanting to get evidence for a news story spend a lot longer searching for news stories in reputable sites. Fake news, much less. And generally, it tends to be on social media platforms. Next slide, please. And I think this really illustrates the huge disparity between the majority of American public that seek their news from reputable sources because they recognize there's a process that goes through, and actually those that seek fake news are involved in fake news. And again, there's a significant disparity in the amount of time that people on fake news sites spend. Next slide, please. I find this really interesting. The fake news audience itself remains quite small. Next slide, please. It's much easier for fake news producers to flood the news. And here's the thing. Fake news in general could have a corrosive effect on news media by making it more difficult for audiences to determine what is real and what is not. Next slide, please. Why does this persist? Because often the fake news story is revealed for exactly what it is, utterly fake. Next slide, please. And I think this is the issue. A lack of trust, a lack of perspective. So this morning, as we were getting ready to come out, I watched BBC News, and every week there's a segment in the news in which it deals with complaints to the BBC. And one of the main areas of complaints was last Sunday's interview by Mar of your man Farage on the Mar show in the morning. And the primary distinction between comments on either side was some thought the interview was biased and some thought the interview was fair. And so there is this, what Nelson and Tangido observed, is that only about a third of Americans have confidence in the reputable news sources, despite the fact that the overwhelming majority of American citizens go to the main news sources. Next slide, please. I think a second contributing factor, at least to me, is, next slide, most of us live in an echo chamber. Now, let me ask you a simple question, and no hands, no public answers. What newspaper did you read this morning before you came out? Now, I've spoken to people and they will say to me, oh, I read six newspapers on a daily basis, and I think, I'm not worthy, because I can't do that. And actually, demographically, you can, and I know that this is hugely sweeping, you can kind of categorise whole people groups by the newspapers they reach. It was quite common to say that Telegraph readers was the Conservative Party at prayer. So those who read the Times and the Telegraph generally tend to be Conservative. The Daily Mail, right-wing mentalists. The Guardian, sensible people on the left of the spectrum. Next slide, please. But actually what the echo chamber does is it is an environment in which our own ideas are continually fed back to us to reinforce our own perception of what it is that we think we believe. And so some of the scholars that have been mentioned today that have been challenged by our illustrious earlier speakers, I'm sure that they will continue to have a sustained audience because the audience hears exactly what they want to hear. So, for example, if you want to believe that there is evidence of a boat-shaped rock formation that could be aligned to Noah's Ark, well, you see what you want to see, and then someone tells you exactly what you believe. But I have to say, from my reading of the biblical text, it was just a big box. And I think Alan's absolutely right. It wasn't designed to sort of sail across the Atlantic. Next slide, please. And again. A third contributor, I would contend, is that we see with our minds just as much as we do with our eyes. Next slide, please. Now, we're only going to look at this for a short moment, just a few seconds. This is called the Hermann Hering illusion. Two different individuals, they didn't work together, but because they came up with the same idea slightly differently in different times, it's often associated as one illusion. So, warning, brain fuzzle. Okay? What I want you to do is count how many dots you see on the screen. Only a few seconds. That'll do. And you need to go forward. Yeah. There aren't dots on the screen. It's the interrelationship between the geometric shapes and the colour, black and white, that creates the mind just fills in the blanks. Next slide. Now, this is a really good illustration of how we can add meaning where none exists. Now, it's clear that the person who designed this has done it perhaps with the intention to deceive. But what you will see is not what is actually happening on the screen. Remember that when you watch the video. What you see is an interpretation that your mind creates, and then when you see the evidence, you will probably go, oh, isn't that clever? So what you may see is a group of circles moving in a circular formation. But that's not the case. So Pierre Bourdieu would argue that actually what humans do is they see patterns and then ascribe meaning to patterns. It doesn't necessarily mean that there is meaning in the patterns that you see. This is a fantastic illustration by Roger Shepherd. Would you believe me? I don't have a big ruler to actually demonstrate it, but I have to take my word. I've measured this. I'm a former engineer, so I'm fairly accurate in what I measure. If I told you that the table on the left is exactly the same dimensions as the table on the right, if you're an ordinary human being, you will probably see a long, slim table and a more square table on the right. Actually, this dimension here is exactly the same as that. And this dimension is exactly the same as that, to the millimeter. Next slide, please. And again. So perspective can be really dramatic. The pens in this image are exactly the same size. All that's different is the background context has radically changed. So again, if you're a normal human being, you will probably initially go, oh, the pen on the left is smaller. It's not, it's exactly the same. It's the background content is different. Next slide, please. And again. Now, is the bar in the center lighter on the left or on the right?
Same.
Because you know it. Yeah. So if you take out the background, next slide, please. You see that the center bar is exactly the same. Now, what is true, back one slide, please, is that this area is lighter here than there. And what the mind does is it fills in a darker area here because that makes sense to the mind. Next slide. And again. Now, need to carefully phrase, I have to think about this every time I show this illustration. How many triangles are actually on the screen? Now, by now, you should be warned as to what this is. And the answer is none. However, if again, you're a normal human being, you may well see a white triangle superimposed on a single black line triangle sitting on three circles. The black, the white triangle cutting out an area. If you see triangles on the screen, that's because your mind wants to make sense of the shapes and the images that it sees. Next slide, please. And I think a fourth contributing factor in the presence of fake news is, next slide, that. Next slide. I don't think we fully have come to terms with the impact of the internet. And I know I'm not the only one in this room who remembers the introduction of the internet. And yet has become completely pervasive. Thank you. Next slide. And this is one of the most important ways in which modern people find information and communicate. Next slide, please. Therefore, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to get its pants on. And again, it's often attributed to Winston Churchill, but we don't think that that's correct. Next slide, please. Well, it's honest Abe. How could he possibly be telling us a lie? And then there's perspective. Next slide, please. I like this type of artwork. I have to confess that it appeals to my infantile mind. Next slide, please. And when you see that artwork from a different perspective, you realize that perspective is everything. What makes sense? Next slide, please. On that, next slide, please, makes no sense. Now, let me challenge you a little. Next slide, please. Do you recognize these two photographs? I'm going to be challenging here. How many took a lot of comfort in this image here? Satisfaction, yes? Obama, yay! Trump, just right. Next slide, please. This is the official photograph. And we know that that's Donald Trump there. We can see Donald Trump and his wife and family. Can I ask you to look at the boulevard going away? Now, two things Two potential options here. Back one slide, please. That this photograph was taken at a particular point in time. Next slide, please. Or that photograph has been doctored to create an effect. Either way, it's not entirely sure. But remember, we see with our minds just as much as with our eyes. Next slide, please. I think one of the most significant contributing factors to fake news is the impact of postmodern skepticism. Next slide, please. And I have a personal confession to make. Next slide. I am biased in this. I am a product of the Enlightenment University system. I've been doing something in a university or university context now for over 30 years. I have doctors from different universities and degrees in different subjects. And so I've been the perpetual student involved in university level education. And so I am quintessentially classically modern. Next slide, please. So if you have ever read anything about sociology, you will know that in A-level sociology books, they divide history very simply up into pre-modern, modern, and post-modern. And I have to say, this appeals to me. Pre-modern, God put it that way. There's an attractiveness to this. Modern period, onwards, upwards, the inevitable progress. And again, to my infantile sense of humor, that just typifies a lot of postmodern thought to me. You know, gibberish. Sorry, next slide. And I think Foucault has a lot to do with this, one of the West Bank French intellectuals. And not everything that Foucault was arguing about was wrong. He was absolutely right. His critique of power is devastating. And his insight into human nature, much like most existential thought, is really insightful. But as a coordinated theory, it doesn't really hold much value. But one of the children or the offshoots of Foucault's thinking is, next slide please, the idea that reality is just a social construction. And that includes, next slide please, and that includes science. And this is pervasive actually in a lot of educational settings, that truth is nothing but personal opinion. And so when you hear eminent specialists, as we've heard this morning, actually all you're hearing is old white men saying, I spent 60 years studying this, listen to me. Because if truth is only a social construction, you can't actually come to such a ridiculous position. I don't believe that, gentlemen. I was in awe of your presentations, and I will remember to ever the presentation on the passage in Joshua. Next slide. And it can get to this utter nonsense. For those of you who don't know who Titania McGrath is supposed to be, she is the queen of woke. If you don't know what woke is, I don't have the time to explain it, but it's just being hyper aware and hypersensitive. Turns out that Titania McGrath, and even the photograph is a composite, it's a lie, she doesn't exist. Turns out that the person behind it is a 40-year-old PhD who was wanting to ridicule the kind of scepticism that you find that everything is a social construction. Next slide, please. So why should we trust experts? That's a really good question. That's what I was wanting to get to. Next slide. Well, especially if all knowledge is a social construction and not an ultimate truth. Next slide, please. Few academics would contest, and I know that none of the academics in this room would contest the notion that perspective is essential when you're looking at a subject. And Alan this morning was saying that even when archaeologists do a dig, it still has to be interpreted. There is still a theory of interpretation and a framework that's built. Sometimes in science that concept gets lost, that underpinning science is a belief network that often scientists don't like to realise. Michael Pollini, he actually spent the latter part of his life trying to explain this to scientists, that a lot of science is actually philosophy and belief. So I'm not convinced that oxygen is a social construct. Actually, if it was, we would all be in trouble. Next slide, please. So why trust experts? Next slide. Well, expertise may be defined as a special skill or knowledge that is acquired by training, study, or practice. And I think that's pretty fair. I took that off a dictionary, and I think there's a tremendous amount of truth in that. But I think another way of understanding this is that the expert understands the landscape of their field of expertise. In other words, if you were wanting an answer on some aspect of archaeology, you wouldn't ask me. I'm a philosopher, I'm a theologian, I have a visiting professorship in ethics because of the work that I did in ethics within the armed forces. Next slide, please. But what I want to do is to give you a very visual metaphor for why trusting experts. So, give you a bit of the background to this. I was giving a couple of lectures at a conference, and I presented a notion on ethics, and then the speaker following me utterly and completely smashed the concept of truth as nothing but multiple perspectives, rendering any interpretation meaningless. And some of the people in the conference came and said they were having a crisis because they found it really, really difficult to listen to anything, because the previous speaker had utterly and completely demolished any notion that truth could be identified. And so I came up with this idea. I don't know whether it's original, probably isn't. So that is the visible electromagnetic light spectrum. So I want you to have a look at it and look at the features of it. It's fuzzy, relatively ill-defined, but still you can probably pick up or pick out major color blocks. So what I want you to do is identify what you would perceive to be yellow. Is this yellow? Next slide, please. Are you confident? I mean, we're talking about perspective now. There's just multitudes of perspectives. Are you absolutely confident that nobody would say this is yellow? Next slide, please. Is yellow there? Next slide, please. Starting to get a bit edgy. Next slide, please. An expert not only knows a great deal about their field of expertise, but they're likely to also have a substantial knowledge about closely related subjects. Next slide, please. In other words, their knowledge of the landscape enables them to understand the boundary points, those things which are clearly and objectively defensible, and those bits, and we've heard really good explanations of this today, those bits that are genuinely open to legitimate conversation and debate. Next slide, please. And in this sense, the claim that all knowledge is a social construction is, in my view, excessive. In other words, if you're listening to an expert in science or archaeology talk about their field of expertise, Billy that knows nothing about it doesn't have the same voice. Why? Because of the field of expertise that the expert has. Next slide, please. And this is where I am greatly attracted to the concept of positive realism as produced by Ferrets. And this idea that the notion of reality is unamendable. In other words, it's resistant to human will. Next slide, please. Is that a social construct? No. Next slide, please. The Alps will still be an enormous mountain range long after the cultural wars that are raging in America and Europe have long ceased to be. Indeed, when perhaps the States and the UK and Western Europe are a footnote in a long human history. Next slide, please. There is a reality in the world that is unamendable to social constructs. And so that's why I like this idea of genexis and engaging with those who can actually demonstrate that there is a truth that exists in the universe that is not constructed. Man didn't invent it. I think one of John Lennox's most potent arguments, at least it seems to me, is that if the mind is just the product of random occurrences, why would you trust anything that it imagines? But what is utterly amazing is that the mathematics that can occur in people like Lennox's mind, you find it in the universe out there. Not because we superimpose it out there, but we find the physical evidence that underpins the mathematics of the issue. Next slide, please. Now, when Jesus was standing before Pilate, he stated, according to John, that the reason he had been born and came into the world was to testify to the truth. And what Pilate says, next slide, has been asked ever since, what is truth? And in the age of fake news, which is only going to become more complex, this question is incredibly relevant. What is truth? Next slide, please. For those of us who are believers, this is truth. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. He is not a way. He's not a truth. He's not a life. Next slide, please. And I think that this is a fundamental doctrinal belief that acts as a reference point to those within the Christian community. Now, I recognize that those who do not come from the Christian community may not have that doctrinal reference point. But this is, or should be, a reference point to believers that is unamendable to whatever fluctuation society decides to invent. In other words, there is no context, at least for me, and I would be prepared to burn at a stake for this, where Jesus is not the truth. Next slide, please. Next slide. And again. So in conclusion, trying to keep the time, the word fake news is actually much more complex than we often assume. There are shades and nuances in it. And it's an interesting point of discussion as to whether a statement is fake news or whether or not it is simply an opinion that we don't agree with. But if it is genuinely held, based on the evidence that they say they have, we may question the validity of their evidence, we may go a long way to doubt what they're saying. But I'm not entirely convinced that it sits under the rubric of fake news. The other thing, and I hope that this will give us some degree of confidence, is that the audience for fake news is remarkably small. It is not as all-pervasive as perhaps is presented in the media. People are a lot more shrewd than sometimes they are presented. And I genuinely believe, and this is only the McCormack theory, that the vast bulk of people sit within that basic centre of what's common sense. It's fairly obvious, and actually it underpins English common law. You know, that question is often asked in the court, what would the person on the Clapham omnibus, check me out in my nicely corrected phrase, what would the person on the Clapham omnibus think of this situation? And that it's embedded within the idea of a trial by a jury of our peers. Next slide, please. And the reason why we should trust experts is that actually, if they're a genuine expert in their field, they have spent years studying the landscape. And they understand the contours of the landscape. So if you asked one of our two experts, and I know there are others who have areas of expertise that we haven't heard from today, a simplistic question, they will give you an answer probably along the lines of, it's much more complex than you think, because of the level of research and study that's gone into the subject. Next slide, please. And in a world cluttered by a bewildering array of claim and counterclaim, those who have a living faith in the Lord Jesus have an unchanging and fixed belief. And in an age of false news, the last thing I want to say at this point is, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life.